භගවතේ වාසුදේවාය
නමෝ භගවතේ වාසුදේවාය
නමෝ භගවතේ වාසුදේවාය
හංසා ස්වරූපී අවදාත් අසුතා ආත්මා යෝගම් Hamsa Sarupya Vararachyuta Atma Yogam
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 Data
Data
Kumara
Kumara
Vishavo
Vishavo
Bhagavan Datta Kumara Rishabho Bhagavan Pitana
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 Hamsa Sarupya Vadarachyuta Atma Yogam Datta Kumara Rishabho Bhagavan Pitana
Datta Kumara Rishabho Bhagavan Pitana
Vishnu
Vishnu
Shivaya
Shivaya
Jagatam
Jagatam
Kalayavatirnas
Kalayavatirnas
Vishnu Shivaya Jagatam Kalayavatirnas
Vishnu Shivaya Jagatam
Vishnu Shivaya Jagatam Kalayavatirnas
Vishnu Shivaya Jagatam Kalayavatirnas
Senadita
Senadita
Madhu
Madhu
Pida
Pida
Shutayo
Shutayo
Ayasye
Ayasye
Senadita Madhu Pida Shutayo Ayasye
Senadita
Tena madhu vidasutayo ayasye
Tena madhu vidasutayo ayasye
Vishnu Shivaya Jagatam Kalayavatinas
Vishnu Shivaya Jagatam Kalayavatinas
Tena vita madhu vidasutayo ayasye
Tena madhu vidasutayo
Hamsa Sarupya Vadadachyuta Atma Yogam
Hamsa Sarupya Vadadachyuta Atma Yogam
Datta Kumara Rishabho Bhagavan Pitana
Datta Kumara Rishabho Bhagavan Pitana
Vishnu Shivaya Jagatam Kalayavatirna
Vishnu Shivaya Jagatam Kalayavatirna
Tenadita Madhubhida Shutayo Hayasye
Tenadita Madhubhida Shutayo Hayasye
Hamsa Sarupya Vadarachyuta Atma Yogam
Hamsa Sarupya Vadarachyuta Atma Yogam
Datta Kumara Rishabho Bhagavan Pitana
Datta Kumara Rishabho Bhagavan Pitana
Vishnu Shivaya Jagatam Kalayavatirnas
Vishnu Shivaya Jagatam Kalayavatirnas
Tenahita Madhubhida Shutayo Hayasye
Tenahita Madhubhida Shutayo Hayasye
Hamsa Sarupi
Hamsa Sarupi
Assuming his eternal form of the swan incarnation. Avadat,
he spoke.
Achyuta, the infallible Supreme
Personality of Godhead.
Atma Yogam,
self-realization.
Datta, Dattatreya.
Kumara,
the Kumara brothers. Headed by Sanaka. Rishabha, Rishabdev.
Bhagavan,
the Lord. Pita, Father, Na, Our, Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, Shivaya, for the welfare, Jagatam, of all the world. This is particularly interesting here, how it says Shivaya Jagatam, because we actually understand that this is the reason Krishna appears, is the prime reason is for the benefit of everyone. As he describes in the Gita, this is Paratanaya Sananam Vinaschaya Sadruskutam Dharma Sanstapana Kanya Sambhavam Yuga. To live the pious and in the screens, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So we see that, you know, Krishna in all his appearances, whatever it is whatever form he appears in, is simply to give benefit to others. Everything he does, whether he appears or not, everything he does is simply for the benefit and welfare of others. You know, his very existence, just by seeing him, this word Shivaya means auspicious or all auspicious. So just by seeing him is auspicious. Just by having his darshan, one becomes purified. By tasting Krishna Prasad, one becomes purified. By hearing his holy name, one becomes purified. By hearing about the Lord's pastimes, one becomes purified. So everything in connection with Krishna is purifying. Doesn't matter what aspect of Krishna consciousness we have, some connection with. Just like if you think of something like the process of offering prasad or offering bhoga to Krishna and taking that prasad. If you look at every single step along the way, the person who grows the bhoga, like they're growing a vegetable, the person who grows that vegetable receives benefit. The living entity that actually existed as that vegetable receives benefit. Then the person who harvests the vegetable, takes it to the market, who sells it in the market, every person involved somewhere along the line, no matter what it is they do, if it's going to Krishna, there's some benefit there for them. Because this is the nature of Krishna. He's all auspicious. So it doesn't matter what connection. Even it's described in the Bhagavad Gita how, he casts people into lower species of life. He actually does that for their benefit, so they won't commit offences to him. So then they can come through the process of elevation through different species and gradual purification. And we see, when he kills demons, they actually receive so much benefit. You look at when he killed Putana Rakshasi, what happened to her? She received the same benefit as a devotee who took on the form of Krishna's mother. So Krishna, in all these different incarnations, no matter what he does, he does these things for the benefit of living entities. Kalaya, by his secondary personal expansions. Avajirna, descending to this world. Tena, by him. Afita, were brought back from the depths of Patala Loka. Madhu Pita, by the killer of the demon Madhu. Shrutaya, the original text of the Vedas. Haya Asye, in the horse-headed incarnation. Translation: the infallible supreme personality of Godhead Vishnu has descended into this world by his various partial incarnations, such as Lord Hansa, the swan, Dattatreya, the four Kumaras, and our own father, the mighty Rishabhdev. By such incarnations, the Lord teaches the science of self-realization for the benefit of the whole universe. In his appearance as Hayagriva, he killed the demon Madhu, and thus brought the Vedas back from the hellish planet, Patala Loka. So here it's this description by the Navi Yugendras, who are sons of Rishabhdev. Dramila is describing some further incarnations of the Lord, partial incarnations. So there's many different types of incarnations. As we mentioned the other day, Vipasha Evihidatam Dharma Vipetya Vipayate Vipetya Samana Dharma Yastadri Evihidya Vishnu Thayavadati Vodhi Namadhi Purushan Tamaham Vachami. And it's a very interesting verse by Lord Brahma that it's mentioned that these verses, each single verse in the Brahma Samhita, they just phrase or called Paribhasa Sutra is used. The Paribhasa Sutra means that they're like sutra. Sutra means a code. You know, so in one code, there's a quite a large meaning. Just like we look at Vedanta Sutra. From this, Vyasadeva has taken the Vedas, which are very, very complicated and many, many branches, and he's codified them in such a way that each statement has so much meaning. Just like one of the very first ones, Adatta Brahma Gigyasa, it explains, you know, three words. Adatta, therefore, Brahma, the nature of the mind, Gigyasa, what one inquires. It's explaining basically that now you have the human form of life inquiring the nature of Brahman, which means so many different things. Brahman, there's three basic explanations of Brahman. Who knows?
Paramatma.
Huh?
Paramatma.
You got one way. Brahman can mean the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parabrahman. What else can Brahman mean? Huh? The jiva. It also refers to the jiva. What else? This is given in the Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, the material nature. So it can refer to three things. It can refer to Krishna, the jiva, and material nature. So it's saying the very first thing it's saying in this code is now you have this human form of life, you need to understand the nature of these things. What is their interaction? How they're working together? Yeah? This is what's explained in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita is explaining five basic truths. It's explaining, Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, and Karma. Yeah? And the interactions, how these things are interacting, what is the relationship? What is the Jiva's relationship to Krishna? What is the material nature's relationship to Krishna? And Krishna explains these things very clearly. He says, this is material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction. He explains that very clearly, so there's no need to be in any doubt about these things. He explains the nature of the jiva very clearly in the Gita. And the jiva is coming from him. And actually the position of the jiva is to serve Krishna. Krishna explains all these things very nicely. So also in the Brahma Samhita, same idea, there's like simple code. It's just a simple statement, very short, terse statement. Is explaining a very, very deep philosophical point. So all the verses in the Brahma Samhita are also called Paribhasa Sutras. And in this one, it talks about a candle. You have a dipa. And it says, just like you take a candle and you light another candle from that candle, what's the difference? They look the same, they give off the same light, they have the same capacity for burning, etc., etc. They're identical in every way, except for one thing. Yeah, exactly. One is the original. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his translation to this verse, he says, just as the light of one candle is communicated to another, so in the same mobile fashion, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he manifests himself in multifarious forms. It's very interesting. He says, in the same mobile fashion. It's very, it's not like a rigid, fixed thing. Krishna can just very easily manifest all these different forms, and they have various potencies according to the need. And as we see here, it's being described as partial incarnations. There's partial incarnations, there's plenary incarnations, lila incarnations. So many different incarnations of Krishna for serving different purposes. So we see here, Hansa, the swan, had a particular function. Dattatreya had a particular function. Lukumaras, they also have particular functions. And also Rishabdev have particular functions. In all these different forms, he's teaching the science of self-realization for living entities. So he's bestowing benefit upon the living entities so they can actually understand what is their true nature, what is their actual goal and duty here in this material world, and what they're supposed to be doing. And in this way, he benefits all living entities. And it's saying here, for the benefit of the whole universe. And we see here, it says Jagatam. So Jagatam often can refer to the world, but in this case it's referring to the universe. And just like we see Jagannath is the Lord of the universe, so Jaga is the universe. And also we see in the appearance of Hayagriva, it's describing here how he killed the demon Madhu. Heard of Madhu? Very interesting, he's a mental demon. Not like like physical form as we know, but he's a mental demon. He actually entered into the mind of Lord Brahma while he was sleeping. What did he do? What did he do while he was there? Read his thoughts? Huh? No? He stole something. He stole the Vedas. Madhu, and he ended in sort of that Bhutana, Kathana, Poitava, and Satana. What's that? Line? Vibhava, Isha, Shamaka. Srimadhu Sudama, so in that song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he talks about how Krishna is known as Madhu Sudama because he killed Sudama, he killed the Madhu demon. Yeah. So Madhu, he actually was a mental demon. He entered into the mind of Lord Rama and stole the Vedas. And then Hayagriva, he went and killed this Madhu, and he got back the Vedas and then gave them back to Lord Rama, and Lord Rama was able to. So the Vedas, it's interesting, they're manifest in some of these ways. Originally, when Brahma was born, because he's called Padmaja from the lotus born, it's one of the names of Brahma. And he was born upon the lotus which sprouted from the navel lake of Lord Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, this lotus grew out of his navel, and he was born in that navel, on that lotus, sorry. And there he heard the vibration of the syllable Om. And from this he actually understood, and at that point the Vedas were revealed to him. And then so later on, he's sleeping during, a partial annihilation, because when Lord Brahma sleeps, then the universe is up, the ones that are in, the planetary systems that are in ignorance and passion are inundated, so the waters rise up, and then the planetary systems that are in the mode of goodness are above that, which means Satyaloka, Janaloka, and Tapaloka. Not the planets of the demigods. The planets of the demigods are in passion, but these three, the planets of the sages, Satyaloka, Janaloka, and Tapaloka, these are understood to be above that. Yeah? So the water doesn't inundate those planets. Only when there's a full annihilation of Palaya does this happen. And so, obviously, at this point, Brahma, he was when he was sleeping, this would have been during a partial annihilation, because every night the waters rose up. And so at that time, Madhu came and he stole the Veda. So again, he had to learn the Veda. Now, when this goes on every night, something like this happens every night, I'm not sure, but every day when Lord Brahma is, because there's this partial annihilation, so it means that everything's destroyed. It's just like, if you've ever seen a flood, when it comes, then after the flood everything needs to be rebuilt because it's all destroyed. So in the same way, when all the planets are inundated, then Lord Brahma has to again create. So sometimes it seems here he has to go through the process of remembering how to create. And this is this, as it described in the Gita, this remembrance comes from Krishna. Not this with the Gyan or Vanchar. So we see here it's describing how Krishna is always acting for the benefit of all living entities. And it's interesting to note that the Vedic culture is also this way. We see in materialistic culture, then people act with a view to exploit. The whole thing is Purusha Prakriti, Bhumki Prakriti, they're exploiting the material nature, they're exploiting the resources. Why? For sense gratification. Because sense gratification means I take something which I enjoy, which means you can't have it. And we see this is very common, this enviousness is there in the true world. And oftentimes you see it, you know, like someone, there's something there that someone can't enjoy, so they break it so someone else can't enjoy it. Very much like that. And the Vedic culture is the exact opposite. Is in Vedic culture, the living entities are always performing activities which are for the benefit of others. Just like we see, there's that verse Lord Chaitanya was quoting, Bharati Gumi Hari Mansan Jamun Satapi Karikara Para Upakar. This Para Upakar means the supreme welfare activity. It means, in the Purport, Prabhupada discusses how this means giving your life for the benefit of others. So this is what Krishna consciousness is about. It's not just about, you know, because Prabhupada describes there's two types of yogis or practitioners of Krishna consciousness. There's a bhajananandi, who simply sits down and does bhajan for his own benefit. But Prabhupada indicates that this is selfish because they're not actually concerned about the welfare of others. But then in one of the last purports in the discussion of Prahlad Maharaj, he says that we follow in the mood of Prahlad Maharaj, because Prahlad, when he was offered this benediction by Lord Vishnu, you can have whatever you want. And he said, he responded to the Lord, he said, but my Lord, I think this is just like a business arrangement, because I didn't approach you asking for something. I just simply want to serve you. He said, but if you're actually going to give me any benediction, then you give this benediction to others, because I'm concerned about others in this world. That they're suffering, etc. like that. So he wanted that his father would become benefited by Krishna consciousness. And we see the same example is there in the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You look at Vasudeva Das. He wanted to take on, I believe it was Vasudeva Das, he wanted to take on the karma of all living entities. So that they would have, because he could see that the karma was actually blocking them from the practice of devotional service. Because of the sinful activities they performed in the past. This as we're describing the other day, the karma, when you actually perform, not the karma, when you perform a sinful activity, it has two effects. It produces reaction, but it also increases one's proclivity towards sinful activity. So if this can be removed, then the living entities are naturally in a more pious condition. So he wanted to take on all the sinful reactions of all the living entities, just so it would increase the possibility for devotional service. So this is the nature of a Vaishnava. Every morning we chant this Pancha Kalpa Kripa Sindhu Vyevichara. Kripa Sindhu means, Kripa means mercy, Sindhu means ocean. They're actually an ocean of mercy. Why? Because they're actually interested in the well-being, the welfare of all living entities. A Vaishnava is actually, interested to see that everyone gets the opportunity to be exposed to Krishna and Krishna consciousness in some way or another. And so Prabhupada, he was saying that in those purports towards the end of the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj, how we're actually taking up this mood of Prahlad and we're just wanting to perform activities for the benefit of everyone. So this is what, Vedic culture is all about, is performing activities. Just like you see the king of the country. The king of the country, his business is to rule the citizens in such a way that their life is the obstacles in their life are removed, so they can come to the point of practicing Krishna consciousness, and come to the point of realizing what is the value of life. But what do we see that the citizens, the rulers of the country these days? What are they doing? They're exploiting like anything. There's some guy in America, who's just getting in trouble right now, who was a governor or something, like the leader of one of the states there, and he was just exploiting that position for his own self-aggrandizement. Just self-aggrandizement. And so he could get, better position, get all his, if anyone wanted to get a position in the state, they have to pay him money, and et cetera, all these types of things going on. And this is not uncommon. It's actually becoming more and more common as Kali Yuga progresses. People are utilizing positions, whatever they have, for their own benefit, for the benefit of their family members, for the benefit of their friends. Actually exploiting the system. This is a degree, this is some, varying degree of sense gratification, just actually trying to make their life better. But what they actually do is implicate themselves further and further in the cycle of death, because they become more bound up in just trying to exploit the resources of dual nature. And we see in every walk of life that people are doing this. Materialistic people are doing this. This using whatever resources they have available to them to try to improve their material condition, to try to enjoy their situation in this material world. And largely it's because they don't know any different. They don't realize what the human form of life is for. Na te vidu srapa katinka vishnu. They have no idea whatsoever. This is na te vidu. They do not know at all. Because they're immersed in ignorance, they have no understanding of what the human life is for. And that's why the very first aphorism of Vedanta Sutras is Om Atata Brahma Jityasa. Now you have the human form of life. Your business is to inquire into the nature of the Absolute. The very first thing we need to understand is, what is the human form of life for? And we see in the beginning of the Gita, the first chapter of the Gita is contents of the Gita summarized. Krishna's not really giving any instructions there. It's just like, it's just like setting the scene. But in the second chapter of the Gita, Krishna starts to give instructions. And what's the very first instruction he gives to Arjuna? What's the very first instruction he tells Arjuna?
That you're soul, not body.
Exactly, that you're not this body. And about half the chapter is spent on this. You know, in various ways, Krishna's pointing out to Arjuna how the body's temporary, how the soul's eternal, and how wise people see this. You know, he's in many, many different ways. And that, you know, that when he establishes that premise, then from there he expands in so many different ways. An understanding that I'm not the body. If you understand that I'm not this body, why do you try to enjoy through something you're not? It's just like, you know, like making your car feel good and you're going to enjoy it. Yeah. Feeding your car some nice ice cream, thinking you're going to enjoy it. Yeah. Or when it's cold, you put your car in a warm room, you think, oh, now I'll feel better. It's just foolishness. And if anyone started to do things like this, people would think they were crazy. Yet we see that most people in this world are doing things like that. They're doing things to try to enjoy it through something that's not them. And this is the perfect nature of the illusion. Krishna's made this arrangement so the jivas are thinking that this is me. And they're making so many arrangements to try and enjoy it in this fashion. So, this is the nature of materialistic society. It's because the jiva is convinced, 100% convinced that he is this body. And this is the very means of his satisfaction, is to satisfy the body in whatever way I can. This is how I will enjoy this world. It excludes others. You know, because it's self-centered. Because this, you know, my way of being happy in this world is to make myself, you know, enjoy, to make my body happy. So that's, you know, exclusive. You exclude others. But actually, in Vaishnava culture, in Vedic culture, we understand that I'm not this body. We understand what the purpose of the human form of life is for. We understand the human form of life is actually meant for going back home to Godhead. And as Krishna points out in the end of the Gita, one of the last two verses is Yari Dam Paramam Guyam Mad Bhakteshva Vidashiki Bhakti Bhakti Mai Param Kripa Mami Vaisham Santaya Na Cha Tashman Manusha Shu Kashin Me Vrikma Bhavita Bhavita Chana Me Tasha Anya Priyataro Bhavis Anya Priyataro Bhavis. Never be one more dear to me. He says this to Arjuna. Then that person who explains this message. So Krishna's, you know, like, we've got this basic understanding, okay, I'm not the body. What am I? I'm a servant of Krishna. And what's the purpose? You know, as a servant of Krishna, what do we want to do? We want to become dear to Krishna. So Krishna in the Gita, he's pointing out very clearly how to become dear to him by giving the message that he's taken, you know, he's come to this world, he's appeared as Krishna in this world simply to give the message of Krishna consciousness to the other living entities. He says, Dharma Sangstapana Daya, to establish the principle of religion, I'm appearing. And so he's come in this form of Krishna, he's come in the form of Lord Chaitanya to deliver the message of Krishna consciousness. So when he sees someone who's giving their life to present Krishna consciousness to others, then Krishna is inspired by that, Krishna is enlightened by that. And that person, as he says to Arjuna, there is no person in this world who is more dear to me than that person who is delivering this message of Krishna consciousness to others. So we see this is the way that we become dear to Krishna. This is the way how we automatically develop in Krishna consciousness. We don't need to make any other separate endeavor. We just spend our time and our lives trying to give Krishna consciousness to others, and this is going to automatically facilitate our advancement. We don't have to make a separate endeavor. So it's a very, very nice system. And it's actually, it's kind of interesting because we see it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I think it's chapter 5 of the other little, I don't remember exactly when. It's somewhere 5, 6, 7, something like that. How it's describing the reasons for Lord Chaitanya's appearance. And it mentions there that when he saw how much bliss the devotees were getting by serving him, because actually the bliss the devotee experiences is higher than, from serving Krishna, is higher than the bliss that Krishna himself experiences. Yeah? So he decided, okay, I want to appear as a devotee, so I can also experience that bliss. When he saw how much bliss Srimati Radharani was experiencing by serving him. So Lord Chaitanya, he came, and as his servant, his ideal servant, he propagated Krishna consciousness, because that's the thing he wants. He wants all the jivas to come into contact with him. He wants all the jivas to come back to Godhead. Why? Because he sees the suffering that's going on here in this world. This is right in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, as he pointed out. They're pointing out how in this age of Kali, people they have short lives, they're quarrelsome, lazy, unlucky, misguided, always disturbed. That's the nature. And we see, you don't have to look very hard to see how people are so disturbed. Just like yesterday in Sydney, I was just looking at the news this morning. There was some argument on a train. And one youth, 16-year-old boy, stabbed someone else and killed them. Is that a peaceful person? Is that a person who's equipoised in mind? Who has no problems in this world? They probably think it's like that for themselves. That they have, I like my life, it's very good. Or are you going to like spending the next 20 years in jail for killing this person? Obviously their life is not, they're not peaceful, they're not happy. If they were peaceful and happy, why would they need to resort to such behaviour? And we see this, like, it's so common in this day and age that people talk about stress management and stress relief. Mm-hmm. All the, isn't it? You hear it all the time. I was depressed. Oh, I was stressed. I did this because I was depressed. I did this because I was overstressed. You hear it all the time. But actually, someone told me something very interesting the other day. They saw this program, and there was this, quite a famous psychologist, psychiatrist, whatever you call him, I'm not sure, I don't know much about this stuff. And this guy had written a book, and he had established the three most important things in relieving stress. And I tell you, it'll blow your mind when you find out what they are. The three most important things. What do you think the most important thing is?
Sex.
Common answer. How many people get relieved of stress from sex? Probably the exact opposite. It creates more stress for you. One of the prime things for relieving stress, believe it or not, is smelling a flower. When you smell a flower, the fragrance, it's actually scientifically proven, when the fragrance enters into your olfactory, touches with the olfactory nerve, the reactions it has in your brain, chemical reaction it has, relieves stress. So when you're feeling stressed, you pick up one of those nice gardenias or nice roses. Krishna's my happy son. And this person wasn't a devotee, by the way. He was just like a regular scientist and a psychologist, psychiatrist. Number two thing for relieving stress, mantras. He said mantras, repetitive mantras, are very good for relieving stress. Number three thing, repetitive beats. So we see the whole process of Krishna consciousness. It relieves all this material conditioning. So it's just perfectly designed by Krishna. It's like, it's kind of amazing. Every time you hear some new discovery they come up with, Geez, I seem to remember reading that in the Bhagavatam, you know. That's not this new discovery, and like it was written down by Vyasadeva 5,000 years ago. And they think it's so wonderful, you know, like this guy's written a whole book about relieving stress. I mean, you know, we've been doing this for, you know, so many years now, and you just come up with it in a book. I mean, well, we'll be, you know. Tell us something we don't know about. You know? So the process of Krishna consciousness, you know, any material problem you have will not be solved by some material solution. There are no solutions for material problems in the material world. There's only spiritual solutions. So the whole process of Krishna consciousness, if people, you know, sincerely and seriously take this process of Krishna consciousness, it will relieve all the problems they have, without a doubt. Well, any problem they have, there's no problem in this world that cannot be relieved by Krishna consciousness. You know, their food problem, their economic problems, everything. And it's such a simple process. It's not, you know, you don't have to be very smart, you don't have to be very wealthy, you don't have to, I mean, things can be engaged, but it's not necessary. You don't have to, you know, as Krishna, you know, Arjuna's questioning Krishna in Gita, you know, because Krishna in chapter 6 talks about this process of yoga, how you've got to sit in a certain position with your mind erect, you know, your sort of back erect, and the eyes in such a way, and the mind, etc., etc., all in such a way. And Arjuna, what does he say? Chanchalam hi mana Krishna paramahansa brother. You know, he says, I think that the practice is more difficult than controlling the raging wind. And Prabhupada discusses that in the purpose. He says, yes, it's too difficult. Therefore, the practice of Krishna consciousness is so simple. And Lord Chaitanya, he says, there's no hard and fast rules for following this. You can chant Hare Krishna in any time, place, or circumstance. No hard and fast rule. You don't need any material facility for practicing Krishna consciousness. And it's just suitable for this age because, as we mentioned, in this age, people are quarrelsome, they're lazy. You know, to follow the method of Jnana Yoga that was followed in the Kriti Yuga, in the Satya Yuga, it generally would take 60,000-70,000 years of meditation. Who's that person in this day and age who's going to sit down for that long? I'd be surprised if they sit down for 60 seconds and actually focus on something. Because that's the nature of this age. People's minds are so disturbed. So the process of yoga that Krishna is presenting in this age is just suitable for the people of this age. He always gives things that are just suitable, just so it's easy for people. He's making it as easy as possible. You know, because he wants people to succeed. He wants people. It's just like, you know, like sometimes when you do examinations, it's like it seems like the lecturer wants to make the examination as hard as he possibly can so people will fail. In our school in Mayapur, we want to make it as easy as we can for people to understand, for people to actually take up the skills and the knowledge and the values of being a Brahmin. So we give them as many chances as they need to learn how to do these things. Obviously, to pass the exam, you have to pass, but we give them opportunities and training, etc., etc. So Krishna does the same thing. As many opportunities as you need to become God conscious, he gives you. If you need life after life after life after life, fine, you'll get that. Krishna explains that in the Gita. In that verse, they have karma nashasvi praktivaya vidhi svapnashidamasha trayatayamahata. He says, svapnashidamasha. Even a little bit of advancement in this devotional service is never lost. So we make a little bit of advancement. Prabhupada gives an interesting analogy. He says that it's just like, you know, you want to start a business and every day you get 1 cent, 1 cent, 1 cent like that. Yeah? And after a while you have $100, so then you can start your business. So Krishna consciousness is like that. It's like in this life you make some endeavor, you get that benefit, and it's never lost. It's never lost, it's always there. So whatever we do is our eternal benefit. And in the next life we get the opportunity to take up from the same position. Actually, a little bit further advanced than that. You know, Prabhupada explains, if you in this life you achieve 10%, in the next life you start 11%. There's always benefit there. So Krishna consciousness is very simple like that. Krishna gives us this opportunity, which he just, you know, continually gives us these opportunities, no matter how long it takes to practice devotional service. Whereas in the material world, just like you go to university, you know, and you do a degree. How long can you defer a degree for? 12 months. You've got 12 months. If you defer a degree, after 12 months you have to start again. It's like that. You could spend years and years and years getting this degree sometimes, but Krishna makes it so easy. Even if you get through this life and you have to start again your next life, just take up Krishna consciousness. And that's the whole process is just aimed, the whole culture, everything is just aimed at benefiting the living entities so they can ultimately get this opportunity to revive their original constitutional position, because this is not our nature being here. This is not what we're like. We're actually servants of Krishna, and Krishna is prepared to give us as many opportunities as necessary. Therefore we see he's coming, this is being described here, he's coming in so many different incarnations. What's the purpose of these incarnations? Obviously there's a certain degree of, you know, that he wants to enjoy pastimes, that's definitely there. You know, and even it's described how when one time Lord Krishna, this is just like the amazing feature of his pastimes, he was feeling an itch on his back and he couldn't reach the itch on his back. It's just like, you know, say for instance you have an itch between your shoulder blades. You can't quite get to it, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. You get these little stick things sometimes to scratch your back. But so Krishna was feeling an itch on his back, so you know what he did? You don't know what he did? He incarnated as Korma. Huge tortoise. And then he had the demons and the demigods bring this Mandara mountain. Mandara mountain is very big. So big, in fact, that the demons and the demigods got squashed while they were trying it. So the Lord manifested himself in another form to carry the mountain on one hand. Right? Brought it down, put it in the ocean, and it got on the back of it. And then you know, he manifested. Every single facet of that pastime, look, was Krishna manifesting in different ways. He manifested the potency of Vasuki, he held the mountain in place, he manifested on top of the mountain, and put the potency in the demigods and devas to be able to churn the mountain. Yeah? Just so he could relieve an itch. He was feeling this itch. So he put the mountain on his back and scratched his back with the mountain, just like we would use a little stick. We were using a whole mountain. So he just performs wonderful pastimes. And even, the, you know, like, okay, he's got some external reason. The devotees hear about these things, these pastimes, these wonderful pastimes, and they become more attracted to Krishna. So you see how Krishna is benefiting the living entities just by performing these wonderful pastimes. And then, you know, in other pastimes that we see in these ones being described here, like with Rishabhdev in the fifth canto, he's describing all these, you know, he's discussing all these, you know, he's preaching to his sons, telling them about devotional service, etc., etc. Hayagriva, you know, living the Vedas. So in so many different ways he's performing pastimes to attract the living entities back to Godhead. Prahlad Maharaj explains how the Lord appears in every single species of life. Every single 8,400,000 species of life, Krishna's got that many incarnations and more. And in each one of these species, he's doing something wonderful to attract those living entities back to Godhead, to facilitate them making advancement in spiritual life. He appears as an ant. There's an ant incarnation of Krishna. And he's performing some wonderful pastime there in order to give other ants in that, in, you know, in the ant colony, whatever it is, you know, the opportunity to start up their devotional process. He's constantly performing activities, pastimes, to give living entities the opportunity to start the devotional process. So we're very fortunate we have the human form of life, where we can actually dedicate our lives to performing the activities of Krishna consciousness. And by dedicating our lives to practicing this activity of Krishna consciousness, Krishna becomes very pleased. So this is the, you know, the actual, the goal of the human form of life, is to use this human form of life for the service of Krishna. So I'll just read the purport. It is stated in the Skanda Purana that the Lord of the universe, Hari himself, once appeared in the form of a young brahmachari, Kumara, and spoke transcendental knowledge to Sanat Kumara. Any questions at all?
Just that you were speaking about at the end of like, your Gita, the story about who's most dear to Krishna. I was just wondering, it was about explaining the supreme secret, I think, to others. On the one hand, you have dedicated preachers who spend their entire lives preaching, and then you have just regularly when they invite people to their home, you know, and in that way they're still explaining the secret. So is it that, you know, the ones who've dedicated their entire life, they're more dear to Krishna, and the others are just
The thing is, like, we can't judge it on the external activity alone, like the quantity. We can't quantify Krishna consciousness like that. There's an interesting story, I'm sure you're aware of it, when Lord Ram was crossing the ocean to Lanka and Hanuman was throwing rocks in, and there was a little spider who was throwing grains of sand in, and Hanuman was saying, get out of the way, you'll get hurt and you're actually not doing much anyhow. And Lord Ramachandra explains, no, I see the service as the same, because you're serving me to the best of your capacity, the spider is also serving me to the best of his capacity. So that's what the Lord looks at, is like, you know, how much that person is surrendering to the service. So you may find, you know, the grihastha couples, they're doing home programs, they're serving to the best of their capacity. And we see Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was a grihastha. It doesn't just mean because someone is wearing sannyas vesh that they're more dear to Krishna than a grihastha or a brahmachari or whatever, brahmacharini. It doesn't necessarily mean that. And there's another story, which I was listening to the class the other day, Prabhupada was telling the story, how the story of the Brahmin and the cobbler. So the Brahmin, he was, you know, chanting Vedic mantras, doing yagas, and all externally what looked like a very, very religious life. Yet the cobbler, in Bengal, cobbler's called muchi. Means they're unclean, yeah? Because they're working with leather all day long, so they're unclean. Yet, anyhow, the story goes that, you know, Narad Muni, he came, he saw the Brahmin, and the Brahmin, and he explained to the Brahmin, he was going to the spiritual world to see Narayan. And the Brahmin said, oh, when you're there and see Narayan, can you ask Narayan when I'm going back home to Godhead? Narad Muni said, yeah. And then so he went on and he came across the cobbler. And the cobbler asked the same thing, you know, he said, can you ask my Lord Narayan when I go back to Godhead? So then, Narad Muni, I'm sort of like really abbreviating the story here. Narad Muni, when he was there, he saw Narayan, and he asked when they're going back to Godhead, and Narayan said, well, the Brahmana, he's not going back for many, many verses. And Narad Muni was a bit puzzled, and he said, and the cobbler, he will go back at the end of his life. He'll come back to Godhead at the end of his life. And Narad Muni was like, whoa. Can't deal with this, isn't too much to understand. And so he said, like, my Lord, I can understand this. Brahman's been practicing, you know, so many areas, studying the Vedas, etc., etc., all this sort of stuff, his whole life. Yet the cobbler's an unclean person. Why? He said, when they ask you, he said, they'll ask you what I was doing. You tell them that I had an elephant and I was pushing it through the eye of the needle backwards and forwards this way and that. And Narayana was even more confused. He didn't know what was going on. So then, anyhow, so he went down and he saw the Brahman, the Brahman asked him when I'm going back to Godhead, and he said, oh, Lord Narayan said, not for many, many births. And the Brahmana, he said, oh, this Vedic knowledge is all useless, it's a waste of time, you know, I don't believe it anyhow. He said, I don't believe he went and saw Narayan. What was he doing? And he said, oh, he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the Brahmana said, that's impossible. He was like, I don't believe this stuff anyhow, and just walked off. Yeah. And then when he went and saw the cobbler, you know, he explained to the cobbler, he would go back home and try to identify him. You know, he said, oh, this is very wonderful. And then he said, what was Lord Narayan doing? And he said, oh, Lord Narayan was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. And the cobbler said, oh, my Lord Narayan, he's so wonderful, he can do anything. And Narad Muni said, you actually believe that? He said, of course, why not? He said, here I am, I'm sitting under a banyan tree. Under the banyan tree there's so many fruits. And every fruit, there's thousands, you've seen the figs, they have thousands of tiny seeds in them. And in every one of these tiny little seeds, there's a banyan tree. So if my Lord can put a banyan tree into a tiny little seed, to push an elephant through the eye of the needle, it's nothing. So you see, it's not, you can't just judge by the external appearance. It's what's going on in the heart. And how much we surrender. Ways you can judge is how much the person is giving up material desires. How detached they're becoming from material nature and how attached they're becoming to Krishna. That's how we judge, not just like the external activities. Because we've seen over the years, over you know, millenniums, many people in big, you know, seeming big positions, externally big positions, have fallen from the cross situation. So it's because of material desires. Even though we see with Bharat Maharaj, he was, you know, he had some material desire. He was on the stage of Bhava, just before praying. Yet he became attached to a deer, and this caused him to fall from that position. So, you know, a great personality like he can fall. You need to be very careful.
You mentioned that in the past, in the Chenaloka, Sabaloka and Sitiloka are excluded.
Which ones?
Chenaloka, Sabaloka and Satiloka.
Baharloka.
Satiloka?
Satyaloka is above that again. Well, see, Satyaloka, that's a term that's interchangeably used, sometimes refers to the planet of the Chiradakshaya Vishnu, sometimes refers to the planet of Lord Brahma.
Yeah.
So it's different things. You know.
And you mentioned that the demigod planets are in the mode of passion. So, initially the middle planet system is in the mode of passion, upper and goodness and lower and kingdom. So, the demigod planet comes under the middle.
There's different descriptions there. It talks about the 14 planetary systems, it talks about three worlds, and there's different descriptions, you know, like Bhuvasvaha, Tatsavadura, the sun above that. You know. So there's different descriptions there. But I know it's clearly discussed in the Gita how the planets of the demigods are, you know, when the annihilation comes. Because you see, it's also discussed in the Bhagavatam how the jivas they elevate themselves to different planets, and once they're very advanced, they go to the Mahaloka, Dhanaloka, and Tapaloka, and those planets don't get annihilated during the partial annihilation, as I understand. I mean, I remember studying this. I was doing some of Bhakti Shastri, answering the Bhakti Shastri test. I remember studying all this to answer some of the questions, but unfortunately, I have a very bad memory. I don't remember the detail of it.
When you were mentioning about that boy feeling that man on the train,
yeah.
I think this is all because of television and been showing so much violence all over. And then they see those things, how easily you can kill.
Yeah.
So they want to see it.
Certainly, television is one of the things that is contributing. In Kali Yuga, the very atmosphere is contaminated. And everything that is going on is contributing to this. Even like, you know, I was thinking about it the other day when I was in India. Even a simple thing like a mobile phone is contaminating the atmosphere. Because like they send all these air waves, you know, these like radio waves through the air, and it agitates the molecules because there's all this energy in the air. So everything that's going on in this age is contaminating the atmosphere. Anything that's not connected with Krishna contaminates the atmosphere. So if we have television and we have a Krishna conscious TV station, we're broadcasting Krishna conscious, that's purifying the atmosphere. But because all they're doing is broadcasting nonsense, that's contaminating the atmosphere. And people in this contaminated, you know, the whole environment is agitated, the atmosphere is agitated, the water is agitated, the land is agitated, everything is agitated. So it's natural that the jivas are agitated. And because they're not doing anything to overcome this agitation, they become more and more and more agitated. Just like things just naturally flow downwards because of, you know, what they call gravity.
The next point is, as you said, preaching is most important. That pleases the Lord most, as we have said. Now, when we preach, how do we define Krishna consciousness? How do we explain? What is Krishna consciousness?
According to time, place and circumstance. You know, just like, you know, when you're out in the street presenting Prabhupada's books, then you may just speak directly from Bhagavad Gita. When you're speaking to your family members, you may just present it differently. You may just present nice behavior. But you have to gauge it depending on who you're speaking to. That's an expert preacher. Will adjust things according to the audience. I remember one time in Poland, we were setting up a program, I can't remember the name of the place, near the beach, and there was a lighthouse there, and we had permission from the council to set up the program there, but the lighthouse keeper had a different idea. The lighthouse keeper was in charge of that area, and he said, no, you can't set the program there. And the devotees on the tour, you know, the devotees who were setting up, they were trying to preach to this man, and they were trying to preach, you know, what they understood Krishna consciousness. Didn't work, he just dug his heels in deeper and deeper. He just wasn't interested in changing. Then Indra Maharaj came along. And he started to speak to the man. He was saying, oh, you're working as a lighthouse keeper. Yeah, I was understand what it's like. It must be a very lonely life. He said, actually, my father was a lighthouse keeper, you know, and he was like speaking to him like this. And the guy's heart softened when he let us have the festival. So, you can't necessarily always just preach, you know, as they call it, pure Krishna consciousness, because some people are not receptive. You have to make them receptive. Somehow or other, by the way, we present Krishna consciousness. And sometimes that's just getting down to our personal behaviour, how we behave with people, how we dress, our conduct. There's a sadhana. You know, the way we behave is a sadhana, affects people. You know, sometimes they see the way you dress that affects people. The way you speak affects people. The way they see you interact with others. So you have to gauge it according to the time, place, and circumstance. Okay, we'll finish there. Well,
About the Prabhupada, you were saying out of compassion he didn't want any meditation, he didn't want a business transaction to take him. The thing is, like, when he was asking for the welfare of his father, I was just thinking in the third chapter, I think it was, he has a conversation with Krishna that, not him, I hear Jaya and Vijaya, they were having a conversation with Krishna, and they were guaranteed to go back to Godhead anyway. So I was just wondering whether Prahlad Maharaj asked for that benediction or not, they were going back to Godhead anyway.
See, the point there is, like, you look at the story of Jaya and Vijaya, for instance, right? They were offered three births as demons and five births as devotees. They took three births as demons because they want to go back to Godhead quicker. So, somewhat motivated. There's a degree of motivation there. I mean, you didn't want to be separated from the Vaikuntha. Whereas Prahlad Maharaj, you know, he was such an elevated Vaishnava, he couldn't care. You know, whatever birth he took, you know, as long as he had the opportunity to serve Krishna. You see, great Vaishnavas, they take that, you know, I don't care how many births I have to take, as long as I have, like, I think it's Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This is, you know, even if I have to take birth in the insect, as an insect in the house of your devotees, I'm okay with that, just as long as I'm not separated from you. So we see Prahlad, he wasn't interested in any personal benediction. He just wanted to, see that others were getting that benediction. And we see that is also, quite consistent in the line of what follows from Lord Chaitanya, is they're not so much interested in their own. It's not to say that, like someone who's interested in their own benefit is not a devotee. They are a devotee, but as I was saying, there's two types of this. Bhajanandis, who are interested in their own benefit, they do this spiritual activities for their own benefit. They're the ones that will, lock themselves up in a bhajan kutri or something and have no interaction with anyone else. And there's Goshtinandis. And a Goshtinandi is considered to be more advanced in devotion service because they actually give their life for preaching activities, give their life to help others come to Krishna consciousness. And as Krishna describes in the Gita, that person is the most dear to him. Not to say the others aren't dear, but that person is the most dear because they're giving their life to the benefit of others. And this was the move of Prahlad Maharaj. He was simply interested in the welfare of others because he could see that they were suffering because they didn't have Krishna consciousness. And that's the understanding of a Vaishnava, is anyone who does not have Krishna consciousness is in the most abominable condition of life. Because they've forgotten who they are, and they're suffering and illusion. So that's the mood of the Vaishnava, is to see these people are suffering. What can I do to help alleviate their suffering? The best thing I can do, the only thing I can do actually, is to help them understand Krishna consciousness. And that way, they're restored to their original pure identity. Is so
crucial. So either way, the Vajranandi and Goshtinandi, they both still go back to Godhead.
Yeah, they're both servants of Krishna, and they'll both eventually go back home to Godhead. But it's a matter of like, what kind of relationship you want to have with Krishna. You just want to be there in the planet, you want to have a really close, intimate relationship. I mean, Krishna means the most attractive, the all attractive. So he's so attractive, you want to be right there, right next to him, right with him, doing the pastimes with him, like part of the in scene or whatever you want to call it. You want to be right there with him, experiencing everything with him because he's so attractive. But others are more distant, not necessarily so close with Krishna. Others, it's kind of, it's very interesting because even though people may be more distant, somehow or other, the way Krishna interacts with living entities is they feel that closeness. They feel that personal interaction with him, because he interacts with every person individually. But there's gradations. Perfect, more perfect, and most perfect.
Even in the spiritual depth.
Yeah, there's so much gradation. It's not all one. It's not all the same thing. There's so much, there's unlimited variety. As it's characterized by unlimited variety, whereas here in the material world, very limited variety. I mean, how many different varieties of suffering? It's all the same thing, you're suffering. But in the spiritual world, unlimited varieties. And you can have unlimited variety of relationship with Krishna. Okay, Gratulashima Bhagavati, Samaveta Bhagavati, Shri Prabhupada, Jai Jai.